Hi, I'm Josh, and brimful of Brooklyn on the 45. It's a brimful of Brooklyn on the 45.
Yeah. Anyway.
Wow, that's... what's that guy's name?
Corner Shop.
Corner Shop, yeah.
Oh, well, sure.
I've seen him live.
Mr. Corner Shop is my father.
I didn't choose to see them live, and they were not pleased about the situation, but I have seen them live. Anyway, this is Matt, obviously. And, this last week at work, the cheesemonger turned to me and said, just completely out of nowhere, he was like doing inventory, and he goes, "Hey, I know you're a horror movie guy, so like, I just want you to know, I was thinking, and I think I want to see a movie where Slender Man is like the big bad monster. And his like nemesis that defeats him is fat bottom girls, because I think they're just polar opposites." I was like, "So Queen defeats Slender?" He goes, "Yeah, Queen just defeats Slender Man." I'm like, "Okay, I'll note it. I'll put it out there in the universe." So that is yet another pitch that will go unheard.
Yeah.
Oh, fair enough. I was like, he's got a plan. I knew it. Let's see. All right. So I'm going to, this will be terrible, but I'm going to do it anyway. Dun, 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 dun. I popped pimples and ran away in fear. Stopped a pickpocket, almost died. But then he kissed me.
And if you're looking for an influencer, keep looking. And this is Harshal Hot Dog.
Best of luck, both God.
Bye, con queso.
First up, we have a short called Suddenly He Kissed Me, or And Then He Kissed Me. Y Luego Me Besó. Yeah. Jeff Bezos.
Dame Bezos.
Like kinder, gentler Mexican equivalent of Jeff Bezos. He works for Amazon.
Anyway. From Barcelona.
I was trying to think, like, if I knew the Spanish word for rocket and the Spanish word for meat, I was going to combine them, and I couldn't come up with the Spanish word for rocket.
Rocket meat?
Rocket meat. Because yeah, I mean, you have
seen my grill up there alone.
You have seen the pictures of that rocket, right?
No.
Jeff Bezos' rocket is, you know, in Austin Powers 2, where it just looks like a cock and balls?
Oh.
Yeah.
Where they have the whole, like, montage of, whoa, that looks like a
Wang,
big Johnson, get over here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it's that.
Penis and testicles.
Yeah, it's very...
sad that scene is not in the first one, because the first one is the only good one of those for me.
True.
But anyway.
True.
This is
apropos, neither here nor
nothing,
there.
Which is not a podcast that any of us are on at this point. So,
truth.
And Then He Kissed Me is Russian, seems like. Definitely using a Cyrillic font. So one of them Eastern Bloc countries. No dialogue in this thing. So correct me if I misinterpret the events of this, but here's what I understand to have happened during the short. Coupler sitting on the couch watching a horror movie, which is, of course, Evil Dead. Not Evil Dead, Night of the Living Dead.
Yep.
Colorized version.
Yeah. it was...
God.
They went down to, Gorski Prospekt and got the pirated version. So,
well, it's, you know how, like, when aid goes to foreign countries, they end up with... Because, like, when... Like, there's a Super Bowl, right? Companies print T-shirts for either team winning ahead of time because you have to have them ready to go, like, day and date. And a lot of aid that, this is true actually, a lot of aid that goes to other countries is those shirts.
Yeah.
So if you go to places that have been, troubled by famines or, natural disasters, they're wearing like fill in name of losing team of such and such Super Bowl. And so when no one bought the colorized Night of the Living Dead VHSs,
instead of Eastern Bloc,
it's Eastern Bloc countries is like, here, entertainment, eat dog.
It's good. It's good American film. But
he's coming to get you, Barbara.
Well, okay. So sitting on the couch, about to start making out, girl decides she wants to like pop in the bathroom, check things out, pops a pimple and gets the mirror all messy, but then the water's not working properly and she can't clean up. So instead she just jumps out the window to walk to her car, gets to her car, realizes she's forgotten her keys, passes by the hoodlums that she walked past on the way to get the car. One of them tries to grab her purse. She turns around, pushes him off her and gets off herself and gets creamed by a truck.
Yep.
She gets up. She has like a tooth either missing or, you know, bit her cheek. One of her eyes is swollen shut and she, you know, looks like somebody got hit by a car. And she goes back to the apartment and decides to stay and kind of disguise herself until they can make out in the dark. And then accidentally turns the TV on and he sees that her face is all banged up and then they make out.
Yep.
Yeah. So like, this is very droll and kind of funny in a very Eastern Bloc kind of way where it's like, I don't know why this feels funny, but it does.
Yeah.
Maybe this, I'm a psycho. Was this funny? I thought it was funny.
I thought so. That's, I mean, it is so just kind of gently absurd that I just completely loved it when I stumbled across it. And that's why I recommended this one. It's like, it, I could see this being hit and miss for people because it is weird.
And it's kind of Shaggy Dog, right?
Like it is. It's a little longer than it needs to be. It's like, it's clocking in like 14 minutes.
Well, by that I mean, it's just a story that doesn't really have a point.
Right, yeah. But I mean, I guess both. I mean, I just feel like there's some padding on this. But honestly, I didn't really mind that. Because once you hit that pimple, the big pimple explosion onto the mirror, which is unexpected and gross. And the fact that they kind of go, okay, well, how do you double down on that? Like, oh, rather than like any rational thing, she's going to just hop out the window and then just escalate. And you kind of go, well, I don't know where this ends.
And the fact that was kind of my feeling. Yeah. I was like, okay, well now what?
Yeah. And it's just, I couldn't, but it's, you can't look away. Cause you're just like, well, what a bizarre, absurd thing. And then when it comes back around to like this kind of cute moment of like,
this is almost,
you're terrified of being seen as imperfect. And now you come back completely fucked up and I accept you. Is really kind of a sweet little homily at the end of that.
Yeah.
Like it just was like, oh, all right, cool. Like I like that. So yeah, I thought it was sweet and cute and funny. So yeah.
Just an odd little duck, but yeah, it had some care to it. I mean, I for one, like I love the thing with the, cause I was just completely caught off guard with the thing where she pulls the bag back and it was just nailed by the truck. And it's like, and I was like, whoa, oh my God. And then like the whole thing of like, kind of like, oh, I was trained by, I loved her like wiping off something off of her shirt. Like, yeah. Okay. It's like, that, you know, whatever. It's like that little bit of silliness. The pimple thing, I was like, okay, fine. I could just, I was a little bit, every time anything even vaguely kind of makes me, reminds me of excess flesh. I was like, oh no, no, I don't accept this. But it was like, it was brief and it wasn't as bad, I think, as it could have been in that regard. So yeah, I'll give it to him. But I was just like, given how clever the timing stuff and some of the stuff they did and how they edited it, like, I didn't think it was necessary to have to do like that kind of sort of thing. I think it could have cut that a little quicker. And I don't need to see the damn turtle eating his lettuce. Like, I don't need to be there. But, you know, by and large, I mean, otherwise, it's like, it was very charming and kind of a fun little deal. Like, also, like, was it Mike? Oh golly, the guy was in Chuck and Buck, and then he went on to then make the White Mike Lotus.
Mike White,
yeah, he's this guy is like the Eastern European sort of Mike White, like a little bit of Buscemi fluid in there. Like, what is your head?
It's like a little bit of Ron Weasley and a little bit of Danny Elfman in a window. A
little bit of a Heed from Soy Married and Axe Murderer.
Yeah, like a little bit of Monica in my life and a little bit of Jessica by my side. Where are the first four Mambos?
We did not ask about the first four Mambos. The first four Mambos ever bought.
Oh, boy.
No, those are polkas.
Oh, yes, of course.
Yeah.
Silly me.
So, yeah, this was neat. I think it's really cute. I think it's very well made. And I like the quirkiness of it. It doesn't push, like, up to Wes Anderson levels. It kind of hovers around Amelie level. And that's fine.
Yeah, it's a fun little thing.
Cool.
So say we all. So say we won. So say we all.
Yeah, I think when I got to the end of it, I did the affectionate version of, oh, for Pete's sakes. Like, it's like, it was kind of like that. I was like,
you cheeky so-and-sos.
Yeah, that's what I felt. I was like, okay, all right, you guys. So, yeah, good job, Matt. That's sort of a weird little thing to do. So, yeah, good
job. It's another one that I pictured, like, this would be fun to watch with an audience. Because I feel like you'd get a couple of, like, and then at the end, I think you'd get an aw. And, like, that would be a real fun ride to go on with the group of people. I think that'd be cool.
It would go really well with that happy birthday one with the double impalement.
Oh, the people that get impaled with a stick.
And it has that same kind of blasé with, like, oh, well, would you look at that? It's going right through my belly.
No, I really put my foot in the butter now.
Ollie is never going to stop making fun of me. Anyway, what's that? It's fun. So let's start with Influencer this time, because it's my pick for the week. I thought it was pretty great. Mujer de Influencia.
Oh, goodness.
Is what we'll say. Lady of Influence.
Mujer.
Right.
That's a fun one to say.
Mujer. Yeah, it's good for, like, when you're slightly annoyed with your lady friend. Mujer. And then she looks at you like, if you say that again, I'm going to kick you into huevos.
Yeah.
I'm going to scramble your huevos. So Influencer is ostensibly about a woman traveling to Thailand as a career influencer and having a breakup with her boyfriend kind of at the same time and having kind of an existential crisis about being an influencer. Takes a fairly Hitchcockian hard left shortly thereafter, and then just kind of becomes this snaky little thriller that just keeps going. And I was fully along for the ride on this. I thought it was really, really fun.
Yeah, this was having watched 8 billion lesser horror movies, just something with the title of Influencer conjures a specific quality.
Yeah, shallow, and terrible characters getting killed.
Yeah, you know, that's going to be a lot of people, Skyping with someone or something, you know, and just kind of, and a lot of usually, like, kind of vapid loser characters. And so I wasn't expecting much. And this turned into, like, a pretty tight, kind of really just traditional sort of thriller. The idea that you have, like, someone as a social media influencer being in this place could easily be swapped out for, like, if you made this in the 90s, they could just be someone traveling after a breakup and, like, okay, I'm going to take the honeymoon package anyway, even though the wedding got called off, you know, like, you don't need to have that, you know. It plays into the plot a little bit to get people in there and figuring some things out. But the idea of just woman traveling alone makes her vulnerable enough, really. And so I was like, oh shit, this is got some real tension to it and a depth of character and a cast that and especially, I forget her name, our lead, Cassandra, right? Cassandra Naud or whatever. I'm not sure.
She's the one who plays the girl that lives there.
Yeah, she is compelling as hell. Like, she's got a real good, like, steely gaze.
And she's so, like, the switching personalities on a dime.
Yeah.
It's always really jarring, even though that's what actors do.
Yeah, but, like, when she is, like, because she's, you know, she's playing what she needs to be what she thinks will, like, best, you know, lure someone into her web. But the bits where she's playing just real her unobserved, when she switches into that, like, that's such a cold and calculating thing that it's like, oh, that's a fun villain. So, yeah, I was very surprised and then very on board.
Well, the part that really sold me on her was, I mean, that all what you described as all, like, super, you know, positive. The part that really got me was when there's a chance of her getting found out. Like, watching just the color drop out of her face and just being like, oh, shit.
And
someone who's not used to
real time,
Yeah, being on the defensive.
And it's like temporary, but it's temporary because, I mean, she's still like just clever as a fox, but it's like, but just watching that one scene where she just kind of drops it out and you're just like, oh man. But yeah, I was kind of like in Nero's boat. I was like, I wasn't really sure what to expect necessarily, but I was interested. Completely drawing a blanket right now, so I was interested because it does like somebody's like a not traditional like shooting locations plus like, you know, background or whatever. So I was just interested. I was like, okay, this will be interesting to see how this goes. And save for a couple of little decisions, I'm still kind of not 100% on one choice at the end, but by and large, it was a fun little thing, not having clue one as to how it's actually going to resolve itself. That was the thing that I really dug. Yeah. I was like, okay, well, boyfriend guy is going to get hip to what's going on, and he's going to find her out. And then it's like, or then Austin's like, nah, she kept his boyfriend. Like, It's like blonde lady who kind of picks up on the vibes, like, nope, she did too. Like, is this going to be one of those things where like the villain just like gets away?
I really thought that's where we were heading, because they sort of, they give you, in the initial setup of like, I'm taking advantage of this lone influencer and I'm going to like take over her life. And apparently that's just kind of what she does. She's sort of like a traditional like Black Widow type character.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Except not marrying men and then getting rich and what's the Fred McMurray film I just watched? Double Indemnity. It's like, it's very much the setup from like Double Indemnity, except instead of getting married, it's simply taking over social media accounts, which is an interesting way to modernize that concept. But, the setup of like, okay, I've ingratiated myself with this influencer. I figure out her deal. I kind of know what I'll have to work with. This will set me up nicely for a while. She trusts me. I'm going to take her to the middle of nowhere on this tiny little uninhabited island and leave her there. Just drug her and leave her there. And, so like, of course you go, well, at some point, at least I thought like, that'll be like the ironic comeuppance, right? Is like, someone will figure this out and they'll, you know, go to rescue so-and-so and they'll end up stranding our bad guy on the island. And then the movie completely spends the rest of the time convincing me I was totally wrong to think that.
Yeah, I was kind of saying,
no, she's just that good. that gal's just gone. And so when she does, it does come around. I was like, oh, that, all right. That was actually, you'd shaken me off the trail of that hard enough that wasn't, like, I called it from the start type moment. It was like, oh shit. Like they, okay, cool. Like that did, they found a way to write that in too. Mm-hmm. So that was, yeah, it's a weird mix of like not being disappointed by having the possibility of the ending occur to me because the story was solid enough that it was still satisfying and justified.
It is. Once you get the switch and you see that Cassandra is really the villain of the piece, it sets up your expectations beautifully, because you're thinking like, so she's supposed to be the incredibly unhappy influencer who finds all of this kind of empty and wanting, and Cassandra's supposed to be the free-spirited, no technology, live in the moment person that is supposed to lift her up and make her see that there's more life than being on film. And that is such a cliche thing. And the
case
Cassandra makes is so weak. And it's like, this movie wants me to side with her. And I don't. She's wrong. Like, this lady has a job. She's doing her thing. Like, most jobs suck from time to time, right? Like,
yeah.
And
but if your job sucking is, I have to stay in this posh hotel and eat like, fancy food.
But it is just like, I'm like, going, Cassandra's wrong. And I'm finding her a little insufferable. And it's like, oh, the movie thinks she's wrong too. Oh, that's fun.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. She is not the hero of this movie. She's the anti-hero of this movie.
Well, because this could be a totally different movie with a similar setup where that character is your manic pixie dream girl.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it leads you down that path of just the world should always be perfect every second.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's they do, speaking though of that, they don't ever really give a in-universe explanation for how she's able to do this, do they?
How she's able to...
I mean, because, like, we know in reality she's, you know, taking over or stealing from people or whatever it might be, right? She's a grifter. Yeah. But when she's like hanging out with our actual influencer, there's not like a, oh, like, how do you just afford to constantly live like this? I feel like right. that would be an early question for me.
Nobody ever asked that. That's for
she
sure.
She just seems to exist free of care. Like she is living this carefree lifestyle, or at least appears to be. But I just feel like if I met someone that seemed to just have unlimited money for no reason, I would be suspicious of that. But it's not like a, it's not a flaw or anything. I just found it odd. I was like, I don't think they ever explain, or she doesn't have a cover story. I don't think really.
Not really. I mean, but it's like, I always kind of think of that as being like, you know, there's, you know, anywhere you go, anywhere you kind of, I don't know. I mean, sometimes you kind of, you can run into weird eccentric people that just kind of, it's like, how are you existing in the way that you're existing? Like, kind of like, woo doo doo. Like, okay, well, mm-hmm. it's just kind of, you know, it's, and plus, I mean, like, you know, we've had friends that have traveled and spent time in Thailand. And like, from what I understand, it's like, it's this. I'll be careful about language. I don't want to sound shitty, but like, apparently, it's not. It's pretty low cost to kind of visit and do stuff.
Oh, sure.
There, I mean,
there's a lot of places in the world where, you know, if you're able to get there, whatever your middle class income is in America, will set you up pretty nicely in other places.
Well, that's kind of the thing I kept thinking. I was like, cause I was wondering. Yeah, glad you mentioned that, Matt, because I was like, cause that was the thing that I thought of, and it was like. Kind of like, okay, how is the, how do you play that off? And I was thinking that maybe the movie was kind of more on the line of like, it's like she's a lady person, so therefore she's not a threat and she's friendly and like connected to the real world more than I am, and that feels better, and you know, like that kind of thing, because and it just, it's different for different people, because blonde lady later kind of picks up on the fact that our that the villain is like kind of like someone's off with her or whatever else. She recognizes it pretty quickly, and it's like, but Madison didn't. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of like, because people are different people, you know, it's kind of like, and so I thought that was kind of a cool thing too. It's like your shtick may work on some people, but it's not necessarily going to work on every person.
It was right. interesting watching her completely snow boyfriend guy for a little while and then make a fatal mistake with him too. And then you realize that the movie has flipped the expectation on you again, because you watch her do this so expertly with Madison.
Yeah.
And then just she can't keep it up with either of the other two. And they, you know, Blondie knows there's something off pretty damn quick.
Yeah.
And then boyfriend guy eventually catches on and she just barely stays ahead of him, right?
Well, and I think part of that also, I think... lines up with just she's probably never tried juggling two different sets of expectations.
Yeah.
And you know,
like, and didn't having, want to, wasn't planning on doing it.
You know, and she does her best to avoid giving them time to talk privately, but you can see the desperation in that. Mm-hmm. Where if they have time to like cross examine, it doesn't hold together all that well. But a single person in isolation, there's no one to fact check you. So like that. You know, I feel like she just accidentally stumbles into being way over her head and showing that she's, you know, not this insane criminal mastermind, really. She's just taking advantage of people at a very vulnerable time where someone in their hometown wouldn't fall for any of this shit for the most part. Because you just, well, how come none of my neighbors have ever seen you before? You know?
Well, that was the other thing. Yeah, actually, that was another part of it. I was like, this doesn't work in a lot of environments. Right. But like a completely removed environment that is very transitory, you're like, okay, I can see how that would click. Because yeah, a bunch of other ways you do this doesn't work, because it's just sort of like it leads you to like in Ocean's 11, where you know they're walking, you know, when Carl Reiner's walking through the casino and there's some derelict from the dog track. He's just sort of like, he's like, Saul, it's me, you know, and they're like, sure. Oh, you know, they're gonna make it, and they're gonna blah, 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 and it's like. Because yeah, it's like it's just that environment is like gonna, you know, you leave yourself open to it, and it's fun to watch her kind of try to stay one step ahead of it, because a lot of the things that she says are the ways that she tries to control stuff, and she's like, yeah, man, like it just doesn't. I mean, the blonde lady just really picks up on it; she gets it, you know, and it's like, and it's so interesting to watch our lady's kind of plan. And another thing too that I really loved was, yeah, I wasn't really big on the whole like. Like, I'm going to tire of the chair and interrogator bit. But what I really loved was that boyfriend's kind of an asshole. We learned that he's kind of a big asshole, kind of a controlling prick or whatever, and that was interesting in and of itself. But him going like, and her being like, oh, he's so entitled and this, that, whatever else, and him just going like, what are you fucking kidding? Like, that's your reason for, like, murdering people, destroying people's lives? Like, that's stupid. Yeah. Like, what you do that is that you can tell yourself anything you want to, like, something wrong with you, because that's not a reason. And it's like, I thought it was really cool that the movie included that in there, because, like, a lot of times, especially in the 80s slasher kind of motif or, like, the homage, it's like, well, he was bullied as a child, and so therefore he's kind of, like, yeah, or just go to therapy and move to a new city and meet some people. Like, right. Sort of.
Yeah, listen to heavy metal music, like, these, you know.
It's like, fucking, right. Come on. You know, so it's like, so I really like that the movie includes that in there. Mm-hmm. As far as a bit of mechanism. The one thing I mentioned before, the only thing I like, I'm still kind of hung up on is because we don't get and maybe to the movie's credit, maybe, but since we don't get a full on her staring up through her eyebrows mania, and she never knows because it was completely Rebecca Gayheart in Urban Legend, mm-hmm. kind of like Bloody Cookie Bananas last act, the fact that she gets the script flipped over and then she gets stuck on the island as like her like smiling and laughing, I found to be a poor choice. And then what I wanted over the credits was I wanted it to be like day three and she is just like hanging on to life and then out come the police boats. Like that's what I wanted. I didn't want Madison to be like the direct cause of her like dying. What I wanted was her to get back, lay the whole thing out, here's all the evidence, here's this, whatever else, and then the end is Cassandra being like just clinging to life, and then here come the cops, and like that's what I wanted at the ending. And but it was also her like kind of smile, laughing as she's like watching the boat pull away. I was like, no, because I don't think we've not shown her to be like tough enough. Like she's not like a road warrior. She's not Linda Hamilton or something like that.
Well, and the rest of the movie's not quite that cartoony. You
know? That's what I mean. It just feels just a scotch off.
The other choices,
you know. But I mean, the rest of it, there's nice little turns to things. There's just wonderful little bits. And I don't know about y'all, but like even though I didn't like them, boyfriend guy and blonde lady, I was like, oh no, yeah. you guys, you're gonna get it. And I was like, you didn't realize you're gonna get it. You're gonna get it. Like I hope you don't get it. Like oh, you got it. And so like it kind of had me rooting for the well-being of two characters I didn't particularly like. Well played movie.
Yeah. I wanted them to maybe catch on a little faster and be a little smarter, but at the same time, it's like, nah, it's cool if they get chopped. I thought it was funny that once she had them both dead or incapacitated, she went and drove them all the way out to the island to bury them. And it's like, you're crossing open ocean.
Yeah.
Get to the island. I guess, like, if you drop something in the ocean, it might eventually wash on shore. Yeah. But goodness. Just go to the far side of the island. I'll be fine. But that was kind of funny. But then I really liked that Madison popped up again. Because
yeah,
could have also just been a movie where all we do is follow Cassandra. And at the end of it, she gets off scot-free. Like, that would have been a movie that I probably would have enjoyed, too. But when she showed up, and the other thing was she showed up and she was wrecked. Like she did not look like she had found a hair salon and then like a resort hotel on the other side of the island.
Her skin was in really bad shape and she just really looked like it was still rough.
And just seeing the little hash marks on the bamboo that she had, that there were 30 of them. Yeah, she's like, oh, fuck.
Well, that was another thing too. I really loved it. So the whole thing about like when she lays out her plan, right? When they're on the beach at the bonfire thing, and she's like, "Yeah, I would just put something in your drink, and then you would be knocked out, and then I would just leave you here to die, and I would come back and take over your stuff." It was, teehee, isn't that a funny joke? What I loved about that whole thing was that Cassandra or CW whatever. It reminded me of this thing. I know you guys didn't watch Ted Lasso, and you should do that because it's so great. But there's a bit in the first season where there's a kind of a gentleman's bet, and there's a kind of a thing, and the Anthony Stewart Head plays the former owner of the club, and he's like kind of this cad, and he's and Ted Lasso's place is American who gets hired for the soccer job kind of randomly. And so anyway, there's like this back and forth thing, and so Anthony Sirhan's character is going to come back into the fold even though the current owner does not want that to happen, and there's like a divorce and whatever. So they're kind of trying to play nice at this bar, and then you get that kind of like, we're going to be smiling but we're gritting our teeth kind of thing. And then it gets to be this thing of like, it's like, oh, we'll just do like a I'll be at every match for the rest of the season, and I'll be right there next to you, and all this kind of stuff. And the older lady's like, oh god. And then it's like, oh well, what do we play? We'll play a game for it or whatever, and we'll play do darts and stuff like that. And so it kind of lures him into it. And then Anthony Sirhan's character's got like fancy custom darts, this little case, and then we're also like, oh, you know, this whole thing. And then Sudeikis' first throw is like a little bit off or whatever, and then Anthony Sirhan is playing all coy and like, you know, all cocky and whatever else. And then there's this beautiful monologue. It's one of my favorite monologues in the whole series, where he just goes like, he's like, you know, I saw this quote one time about being curious, not judgmental. And I really like that quote. And, you know, you ask questions of people. You learn about people. Like, for example, if you were to ask, have you ever played darts before, Ted? And I would have said, yes, every day, every Sunday in a sports bar with my dad from the age of 8 to the age of 16 when he passed away. And he just nails a triple 20. And he's just sort of like, and then he does the thing, and then hits another triple 20. And it was just like, and it's like, so in this scenario, I'm glad that we don't get Road Warrior Madison, but I do love that at no point does the villain learn enough about Madison beyond just the surface level judgment. She doesn't know if she came from a survivalist family. She doesn't know if she was an outward bound because she'd like knifed a girl in Catholic school and you learned to live off the land. Like, she doesn't know anything.
Right.
Because she didn't bother to ask.
Yeah. Because she's just like a triathlete. She's probably in good enough shape that she'd do okay. You know, like, yeah, there's a lot of CrossFit maybe not being enough, but like, that was one of my things that drove me nuts about her plan is like, I'll just leave you here to die. I'm like, I don't like the idea that the person isn't dead if I'm counting on them never telling on me.
Scott Evil would not be happy with that plan.
Yeah, I just feel like you've drugged them. Just throw them in the water, even.
Like, that'll take down in a puddle would do it.
Yeah, I just that's a lot of trust in your accomplice being 3 feet of sand, a mile or two off, you know, in the ocean doesn't seem. I don't know. That was struck me as odd, and I would not trust. Not that I'm saying anybody should worry about going to an island with me.
Because you wouldn't be caught dead on an island. Nudge.
Yeah, right. And I wouldn't be caught dead on.
Well, it's really, but I just, yeah, I really love that thing of like how the movie like lays that out of being like, because she took it at face value, she was just pissing off on people to the point of being okay with somebody dying because she got to get a bunch of money and a bunch of things for a bit of time. And then, so it's like the extreme of doing that. And but then also for her motivations of being like, it's like, oh, it's so, you know, so entitled, this, that, whatever else. And then the boyfriend guy just being like, this is fucking dumb.
That's and so it's sort of like junior high, just.
Yeah, the combination of those two things, I think, is so cool. And then the fact that the movie didn't really go into her backstory, like, we don't really know. But, I mean, she was like, she kind of took stock of the situation. You know, we don't know what happened on the island there. But, like, it was one of those things. Ultimately, she's like it's kind of like that. The Shawshank thing of like get busy living or get busy dying kind of thing. Sort of like, and so she obviously had something going on in the background. So that was cool that the movie didn't go into that. Like, now, I mean, like your next Shawnee Vincent's character is like, we learn the sex is from this like survivalist doomsday kind of group of prepper type people. And that works fine in that movie because the movie rules and it's great. But then we didn't do that in this one, and that's okay too. That they didn't have like some big explanation. It's just dope as hell that we were watching our villain who's been villaining around sort of like the whole thing, all kind of nervous and scared walking through the jungle area. And like, kind of now she's kind of like on the back end of it. And it's like, ah, that's terrific.
Well, it's kind of the whole Batman and Joker thing. Like Joker does not work if he has to actually physically fight Batman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You
know, all of his plans are some kind of elaborate bullshit with him going, I hope he doesn't catch me. <'Cause, Yes. laughs> you know, and like, there is nothing, you know, remarkable about our antagonist in this. You know, CW is just a person. So it's like, yeah, the idea that she's suddenly like, am I hunting someone or am I looking for a dead body? I'm not really prepared to be good at hunting humans. That's never been part of my MO.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool.
Just a lot of interesting ideas in the thing. It's a cool deal.
Yeah, this is a good movie. I was really surprised by how much I like this.
Yeah, for me, let's see, I on Letterboxd, I think I'd put it at a 4, which translates to 8. I would go 8.5. Like, I thought this was really cool and it kept me guessing. I also really dug that the antagonist, as it is, or anti-hero, has a very prominent birthmark that covers, you know, like a quarter of her face. And that doesn't have to be a big deal anymore.
Yeah.
Like, they mention it when they need to, when to have an identifying feature for someone that, you know, you may have seen in passing. But otherwise, just like, that actor has that birthmark and it's fine. Like, that was cool.
Hmm.
I liked that wasn't a plot point of like, I was always told I was pretty except for, and it wasn't, you know, it just didn't have all that nonsense in there, which was kind of a cool thing. And then how it just sort of continues to not be there. And at some point, I was expecting some scene of that, of like, and then you just get this jacked up thing or whatever. And it's like, it just wasn't a part of it at all. It's just like, eh, not a thing. And it's just like, cool, good job, movie.
Yeah, I like this quite a bit. As I think we've all gushed over it. So yeah, I'd say, 8 sounds fair. 8 out of 10. This is why we double tap. but yeah, this is, like I'd kind of said earlier, this is sort of a throwback to like some classic thriller ideas. And it's just, it's got a good cast that, holds it down well. And it's, this is a fun watch. I kind of thought I'd sort of be checking out watching this one, and I ended up being paying rapt attention to it. It was great.
Yeah, I was kind of the same boat. I was like, I don't know what to expect here, and I was sort of like, well, I was interested. I was like, okay, cool. And then it was like, as I started to unfold, like, oh, damn. This is a, well, let's just see how this goes. It's like, it was a cool little journey. It was fun. You know, I kind of would have loved a little bit more, like, edge color. Like, we got kind of rapscallion British fellow who's like Toby Jones's uncle, that dude. and then all the weights, all the staff at the hotel doesn't really play a factor at all. Like, the bartender and the lady at the front desk, and like they're kind of nothing in the story. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how you really bring them in without suddenly becoming too complicated, but that's all minor shit. I mean, it was just a very entertaining, fun little kind of a twisty thrill ride kind of a thing. Like, you know, like, was it the one with Cillian Murphy and Rachel McAdams, the Wes Craven movie Red Eye? There's not a lot of meat to that. There's not a lot of meat to that sandwich, but it's a really good sandwich. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, it's just a fun thing to experience. Like, I've gone back to watch that one a couple of times since it came out, however many years ago, just because it's like, it's fucking fun. It's like, she's got the pen. Ah, you know, like, it's just like, it's fun. And like, this has that same vibe where you're like, you're just in the back of your mind, as you're saying, Matt, you kind of are thinking about Madison and this and everything else. And it's just sort of like, and how things kind of play themselves out in that third act where you really kind of take our villain and make them off kilter and make them tilt you early a bit. And it's like, how much that rules. So yeah, I'll go just a scotch lower. But I'll say 8. 8 out of 10. Don't judge a book by their sponsored content.
When we talk about Unheard, we can talk about how magical it is when you aren't constantly thinking a step ahead of a movie, because of how often I was thinking ahead of Unheard of. Mm-hmm. Unheard just by itself, not unheard of. But first, can we take a quick break for necessities?
Yes, sir.
Cool. Yeah. The bare necessities of life.
Yeah. Right back.
So next up, we have the Unheard, or La Inaudita. And this movie is about a young woman who had meningitis when she was 8 or 9 and ended up with hearing loss, and goes back to her hometown to help sell the house that her mother used to live in, and seems, you know, takes on a experimental treatment to restore her hearing, which might make it so that she can hear the spirit realm. And from there, you can probably fill it in. But that's where we're at. And like, this does some cool stuff with sound design, because sometimes we're in the perspective of the woman with the muffled hearing, and sometimes it breaks through in unexpected ways. So, like, parts of this are interesting, but overall, like, I felt like I was always three steps ahead of it and just kind of waiting for it to go.
I think I had a slightly different experience than y'all did. I mean, you know, I feel like the first half of the movie is really solid. It's very interesting. They do very minimal amounts of the kind of the noise thing, which it's funny because it bothered you guys, and then it bothered Kristen too, like that sound thing. Like, I didn't even, I was like, well, that's because she's got jacked up hearing. And I'm like, okay, it didn't bother me. But like you three, it was just like, ah! It's like, ah, it's bad. So that's really super bad.
The moments where it really amped up when she was hearing like the signal from beyond the grave, it was just really loud, right?
Yeah, my ears are ringing like a motherfucker after I watched this.
Well, that's the thing. Yes, I don't mean it in a way that's sort of like, it's like, aha, you have a thing that bothers you. But it's more just sort of like, it's interesting that like we watch four humans watch this thing, and like one of the humans that thing didn't bug them. And then the other three, it was varying scales of bother. Much like how I'd have a difficulty with some found footage movies where like, if you move you waggle the camera around too much, I'm gonna get nauseous. Other people are like, I got no problem with that. I'm good. You know, it's sort of so one thing, like physically speaking. So it's interesting how it's different. But I mean, in terms of the story goes, so this is the guy who directed Beach House, if you guys remember.
I do.
Yeah, which kind of stellar. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is dark and weird and eerie and like just kind of disconnecty and just like gross. And so the same guy. So that was kind of an interesting thing. But I really think that the first half of this is really exceptionally good. But then it just kind of like, it seems to kind of be like if you've ever seen a cat. That like once they take a big dump and they get we call them the poop sprints, but like you know they just like they go right into the living room, they go hee-ha-hoo, and they go off another direction. It's like this movie does that in the like after that first hour that's really solid. It gets like the poop sprints for like 20 minutes where it's like which direction are we going? Are we going the slasher or are we going the Audrey Hepburn Alone in the Dark direction? Or are we going more like White Noise with Michael Keaton? Like which direction are we going? What are we doing like with the thing? And it doesn't seem to know. And so it seems to be like a lot of like static energy. No pun intended. But like it just seems like that's where it just kind of like loses its footing. And then it kind of like goes towards the end. And there's a couple things at the end, but it's just that middle section that kind of just droops. To which it took me 3 days to watch this. Not because I didn't like overall like it decently, but it was like that middle section where it's like it just starts to lose its focus. Then I'm like, okay, I'm watching, and my body just goes, well, if they're not gonna have the energy, then you will not either. And out it would go, and so it took me 3 days to finish it because it was just like that middle section kept knocking me out.
I feel like there is a lot of repetition in the middle.
Yeah. Yeah.
Would usually be where the movie is trying to get from 60 minutes to 85 minutes. But this movie clocks in at over 2 hours.
Yeah.
So it's just, we didn't need her to sit down and watch the tape and say happy 4th of July and watch the tape. Especially because, so there are these scenes where she is watching VHS tapes, like home movies, right? And I get that those tapes in that house would be degraded and jacked up.
Yeah, but this is the first movie. Thing I was going to bitch about, too.
Right, like, and we spend like 5 or 6 minutes at a time, it feels like, watching these like sub-scrambled Cinemax level of being able to see and hear stuff, you know?
I figured out that this was the same director as The Beach House because as I was watching this, I started looking up the director on IMDb to see how old he was. Because to me, this is shot by someone who probably never actually watched much stuff on VHS because the people that think that like, cause this is worse, like scrambling and artifacts than even like the VHS anthology movies have,
right?
Which is already annoying. This is worse than these are unwatchable. Like if stuff got this bad, we threw it out when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And like, and the fact that people seem to think that's just how VHS worked. What did they think made that format so popular? If this is what everything looked like, like they seem convinced that everything just looked like eight kinds of ass sunny side up all the time. and no one's heard of a fucking tracking button. And it is, this film became unwatchable. Like, I literally had trouble, like, this was actually, like, making me go a little cross-eyed and get a little sick with how often they do the whole, like, the shitty VHS thing. And then when that effect starts translating into the movie at large, I was just so bummed. I was like, God damn it. We don't need this terrible, terrible effect from your expository VHS thing bleeding over into the actual viewing experience of the reality of this movie.
That was a big choice. But that was a big swing.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, because it makes me think of that Spanish movie Tasis, where like they find the kind of the snuff film deal, yeah. And they have the good sense to be like, we can't sit in that for too long.
No,
we're dealing with our characters and how they're reacting to it, so we're gonna have it just a little bit. And then the other one, I don't know if we've done it for the show. There's one of the festivals a couple years ago that the broadcast signal intrusion, where like. That was another one where I thought it was really cool. It was really not a horror movie. It's more like a kind of a sci-fi-ish sort of horror-y a little bit. But it's like they also recognize that like our characters are more important than the artifact. And so it's more like, what is our guy in broadcast signal? Like, how's he dealing with this thing? And then Texas is like the same thing. This was like what you're saying, Matt, is like it kind of takes over the narrative in a way as like a, like almost like a structure kind of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cause it's, you know, the Ring has like a plot element of like, okay, I've got this weird video and they do some stuff with like mucking about with the tracking and like looking at stuff outside of frame to get a clue and whatever. And it's like they're kind of going for that same thing where she's poring over these videos, except she's not trying to solve a mystery. She's just, I think, looking for footage of her mom, right?
Yeah.
And that makes sense. Okay. But then if it's just unwatchable and so distorted that it's just nothing, like, do you watch it 19 times a night? Mm-hmm. Like, I kind of think no. I think you put it in, you go, ah, fuck, this sucks. It doesn't work. Like, too bad. Womp womp. And then you go about your life. And just the fact they kept hammering that point home just was so frustrating to watch for a movie where the rest of the plot, like that initial opening little bit was kind of neat. I think you kind of have some fun, interesting stuff going right up until it's this whole, oh, I think I can hear ghosts, and you pretty much lose me completely after that. There's a gem of a, or germ of a good idea in this, but it's also a very familiar one, I think, even if you do it well.
Because it settles into a very, like, TV movie or, you know, like,
yeah,
generic 90s thriller thing, where as soon as it's, mom vanished when I was a kid, she just ran off, no one ever heard from her again. And then Mr. Fowler's coming over to check the hot water heater.
Right.
And as soon as they said Mr. Fowler, I said, oh, he probably killed mom. And then every time he popped up throughout the
Fowler
movie, like, which is slightly awkward because I killed your mother and I'm going to kill you, but the ghosts are going to warn you. And I just would sit and recite the plot of this thing.
Yeah.
And then it takes a half an hour to get there. And then once we get to Fowler, you know, the whole big reveal, then fucking barely anything goes except she finally says happy 4th of July. And like, that was not the tension I needed resolved in this movie. Yeah. I really didn't give a fuck if she said glorious Arbor Day or whatever, but like, it was fine, you know,
for those who observe.
Well, that was kind of that's kind of what I was thinking about with that like hammock shaped bit in the middle, where, you know, I was actually thinking that he was going to be that kindly neighbor fellow was going to be fodder. I did not clock him as a bad guy, honestly, truly, because that actor, Nick Sando, is like, he's a good actor. Like, he plays soft at the first half of this movie, like, really well. And he plays it in such a way that he's not like, never makes a lecherous comment, or he never has like kind of a side eyebrow or whatever. Like, nothing. He just plays this kind of soft, pleasant sort of thing. And I kept thinking, like, he's going to be fodder for something else. And I was like, so I didn't really clock him as the bad guy, really. And it was sort of like, so that part of it kind of went over a little bit differently. But then in that middling bit, I think that was where they kind of, they're like, okay, we're going to have a slasher movie, but we're also going to have the helpy ghost. And we're going to do kind of both. But then sort of like, they kind of lose their footing in how to, you know, what's going to be the thing. You know, and it's like, so then that last little bit, you're like, okay, we get some resolution, but sort of, it kind of was two things happening at the same time that weren't really, the stakes weren't such that, you know, her life's at risk, like, yes, but it's sort of like, it doesn't feel as, like, in, was it, Darn Nation, the Robert Zemeckis one with Harrison Ford and Michelle Pfeiffer, What Lies Beneath, where, like,
oh, yeah.
Like that one, the whole third act is like this, like kind of, it's like a roller coaster thing, and it's fun, and it's like, it's like kind of like a, there's a thrill to it, and he's your bad guy, and we recognize he's the bad guy, and then it's like this whole bit, and like with this, it was like they were kind of going that direction, but it never really got to that thing, it never got to the roller coaster ride. It was sort of more like the ghost is still can't, it's just mush mouth and can't understand what the fuck they're talking about, and it's sort of like, so then like what is our, who's doing what, and it's like okay, we got the bad guy. It's like, but one of the ghosts have to, I'm not sure. So like they had like four ideas and they kind of took a part of three of them and then just kind of did them all at the same time, it felt like.
Yeah, and then, like the red herring boy didn't.
Oh, with the world's worst haircut.
Yeah, the one who looked like young Meatloaf with a bad haircut.
Which is just young, like, Meatloaf, if I recall. But yeah, that was also just such a. It was so on the nose, torturing animals, and it's like, oh, fuck off. Like,
and then Weird Mom. His Weird Mom.
Which, again, was just another weird little nothing burger that this movie served. Just
another way to add another half hour. Like, I hate to keep harping on the runtime here, but it's a shame when a movie has a good idea for a short movie. And ends up just putting it in like talking head suit style into a overcoat that's too big for it.
Yeah.
Like it's loose. It's just rattling around in there. You got to get
nowhere near as cool as an actual oversized talking head's overcoat.
Exactly.
Well, and then there's some choices that get made that are like when you talk about the runtime part of it, but then they feel that things are rushed. Like the whole, one of the subplot things that I found more, the two that I found most interesting was, I was envisioning a situation where Weirdo's mom was like, it's like her brother or somebody in town or something, and she's like aware of some like evil thing, but there's some whatever, and like so she's like has some awareness of it or in on something or
she'd
something.
Have like her finger on the scale towards one way or another in the
like something like there's something more going on. With like small town evil, like where she's kind of tied in there. But then the other thing was the doctor lady, where like there's a really great and kind of gross reveal of I care more about the results of my thing, of this study, than the data that you're telling me that does not serve my purposes.
Right.
And like, that is really cool and interesting and dark and weird. And like, then it just goes nowhere. And I was like, man, that's your kind of hook from the second and third act.
That had a like, let's, for a minute. Yeah.
Like, let's make the doctor lady. He's like, ugh.
Yeah. Like the awkward encounter where they almost start making out.
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh, well I should go. It's like, that is another hook in the water for sure to make it an interesting and different direction to take this, but just the whole guy, you know, it's like the Christopher Pike kind of story, you know, like this guy did this, you know, I know what you did last summer and who you did it with, and here we are. I'm not saying like I wasn't like super smart at grabbing that plot point. It was just lucky, like could have easily not been that. It just happened to be this time, but it was irritating just waiting for it to get up to where I was ready to take the story, and then like, oh, that's what's all you're gonna do. Okay, well, you know, I disagree with your choice, but
it does kind of feel like they're wanting a feeling of you having suspense and being like, and I think there's a little bit of it, but I think they're wanting you to have that. But what you're really getting is sort of more like a, well, is this all there is kind of a feeling. And even if it's not so overt that you're mad and stomping around and throwing stuff, but if that's your faith, that's the feeling that you're as a viewer, you're getting that from, you're like, that's really not the feeling we're going for. You know, like you want it to be more like big and heavy and consequential. And like, oh, but it's like, if you're just kind of getting that, well, that's it. Like,
and then retroactively, and like half of the movie, you're going, well, what was up with the party at the other house? And what? I feel like I missed it, that it didn't really make sense in retrospect. And then we end up like running back and forth between their two houses where they had been driving back and forth before.
Yeah, that was a I think, I don't usually like to say this kind of thing, but that I felt like, oh, that felt, that was a very strong technical mistake. Because it was like, maybe because I don't live in that area of the country, maybe I don't really see the nuances, whatever, but like, I had to go, wait, what the fuck? When it was like, oh, we're in his house, not her house. I was like, I didn't grok where the dining table was with the orientation of the kitchen. Like, it all just sort of looked like drab 70s virgin suicide kind of style. And I was like, I didn't really grok one of the other ones. So I was super confused when she asked where the bathroom was. I was like, what are you asking about the bathroom? Like, that's your fucking house. And I was like, oh, it's his house. Okay, now all right. And then I was like, what did I miss something? And so I just like...
Ron walks out and goes, actually, it's my house.
Oh, it's like, okay, all right. Like, we'll call for you, damn it. Yes, so it's like, it has moments in it. And at first, I think the first third to first half of it is, I think, a solid, interesting kind of thing. But it's just kind of like, you know, and Matt, I know you differ from Josh and I, but like, I really love Julia's eyes. You know, what was the Julia?
Oh, yeah.
But like that one leans into her not being able to see and having difficulty with her vision and making the viewer not be able to see stuff in, I think, a more accessible way than like this does with the, as you were saying, Matt, with the VHS thingy, where it just sort of becomes just like, I will not let you in. You're not allowed, you know? And so I was thinking about Julia's eyes a little bit. I was like, that's, I think, the better way to envelop the viewer in the thing that the other person can't, you know, is subject to or whatever. And so that one does it technically, I think, better, and just executed better. So it's kind of those things where I do acknowledge that there's some solid things in here. It's just, I wish they would have picked one thing to be the arching villainous kind of dealy. And just brought more to that part of the story. Because young lady in this is, I think she's really solid. I think she does a really, really good job. And I like the setting, and the circumstances are interesting. And so it's like, there's a lot going in that regard. It just sort of seems to just kind of like completely kind of give up the ghost, as it were. And I think there's too many things that just kind of go like, it's not a red herring. It's just kind of like the party thing. Is it just wrong to just be like, hey, that's no good. Like that's, I don't like if in the middle of watching, you know, Steel Magnolias, there's like a farting demon that walks through the living room and it sort of leaves and it's like, it never gets addressed. And it's like, okay, well, Julia Roberts is going to die and this thing's going to happen and everyone else. But like, what the fuck was with that farting demon? We never explained it. And it's like,
Yeah, because I guess there's that throwaway line where they're like, yeah, you know, abandoned houses up here, you know, sometimes people crash in them or throw a party or, you know, make it a trap house or whatever. And it's like, okay, so you felt you had to spend the screen time to prove that was true. the thing that it sounded like the guy was saying to be more suspicious. That's a weird thing to decide you have to make sure you build continuity into when it kind of breaks the rest of the movie. I don't
know. Yeah, it doesn't. It's like, what was that? Was it a ghost party? Was it like a vision that she's having? That's what I was thinking. I was like, okay, so she's seeing a vision of some event that maybe that's when her mother went missing.
I really thought that would be something that would be part of like the kind of like falling action exposition.
Yeah, and it's just, instead it's just sort of like, this was not a thing like at all. It's like,
I'm still not sure if that was meant to be suspicious boy or not.
Because, like, we get the payoff of, like, yep, he's been creeping on her from up there.
Yeah, like, I've been watching you, like, okay, in a creepy way. And,
so, like, he's been there, but then he doesn't mention parties. Like, what?
Yeah, he was so confused when she brings it up. He's like, what are you talking about? Like, the thing that was,
you didn't,
like,
notice there were a bunch of empty beer bottles in there when you went in the next time to creep on her?
Yeah, the house that was 150 yards from your house that you spend time in. Like, what? It's like, I was so confused by that. Like, I don't, that's weird. So it did feel like there was definitely some things that were in there that either, like, I'm not going to be so shitty as to say, like, oh, they forgot they're in there. But, like, they do feel like they're kind of, like, it's piling on, thinking that they're red herrings, but what they actually are is just, like, things that are unresolved in a way they just kind of, like, muddled it quite a bit in the last third.
Kind of pickled herring.
Yeah, just a little overstuffed with kind of ideas, you know, and you'd need, like, a strong continuity person to sort of say, okay, let's make sure all these threads and timelines line up. If someone was to lay them all end to end on a storyboard, and I don't think they necessarily did that, mm-hmm. to see where maybe this is too much here or not enough there or something. This is all, I think, Josh, you often say, this is all the stuff that you pick apart when you kind of just don't like the movie already.
Yeah. You might gloss over.
Yeah.
So ultimately, like, it is very well done. It's just a really basic plot and a whole lot of downtime that make it, like, the perfect example of what Charlie calls hammock shaped. So it's I would just go 5 out of 10 on it. It has some things going on, but not quite enough.
Yeah, the setting aside all my problems with, like, the visual style of it, like, at best it's kind of going for a thing we've seen. Either if you want to have the ghost talking through sort of EVP equivalent phenomenon versus, yeah, you know, someone being extra vulnerable because of, of some kind of physical difference, whether, you know, blind or deaf or whatever it might be. We've seen movies that address those before, and I feel like even if this cut out the really annoying visual aspects, it would probably not even be that great at being one of those, which would sort of be kind of pedestrian already because we've seen those. So at best, it could be kind of okay. And it, I think, falls short of that okay because of all that stuff that makes it so unwatchable near the end that really made it feel like a chore. I wish I would have liked it more. I do think our lead is strong. I would just like to see her in something else. So, probably there's going to be another good movie from these folks at some point. It just wasn't this one. So I was really annoyed and upset watching this one, and not in, like, the, oh man, that was upsetting, but in, like, ugh, I want to stop, but I can't. There's a podcast. So
duty calls.
Unfortunately, yeah, that's, like, I'm going to say this is a 3 out of 10 4K restorations.
And a drinking button. It's the I was gonna say two turntables and a microphone, but I was, like, kind of, like, taking it in a different direction. The young lady, the lead in this, what's her name, Lachlan Watson, like, I want to see her in other stuff. Like, she really seems to get what acting actually is. I mean, that sounds like a very snooty way of saying it, but, like, I think she watching her in the course of this thing really gets what physicality means. It doesn't mean big. It doesn't mean broad. It doesn't mean all the ups and downsy stuff. It's, like, all the little subtle stuff that you make you believe that she is this character, and she's really solid at it. And, like, I want to see her other stuff, because, like, I was really quite impressed with, like, how solid she is. And so that was really cool. It has some good visuals and stuff. And, like, say the first hour really kind of clips and is interesting, but just storyboard wise, it just sort of, like, I think the doctor with fucked up motivations or some other kind of third aspect thing going on, some other things going on, I think would be more interesting, or a full commitment into the ghost retribution thing, or a full commitment into police pursuing the serial killer thing, because that's another part that feels way convenient. It's like, well, we got the flyers up, and we keep losing young women, and can't make hundreds of nine of it.
20 of them over the last 15 years.
Yeah, that's like, and that's another area where I just kind of go like,
yeah, for picture any town with a population of, you know, less than 500,000, where they lose an average of one person a year that wouldn't be just completely cordoned off from life.
Well, yeah, and on top of that, all the missing women are not black, so therefore they would be,
it's someone they'd be looking for attention.
Them. Yeah, they'd be looking for them, you know. So like, there's that too. So, but that just feels like that thing that gets on my nerves sometimes when, like, I'm just like, oh, it's like, oh, you should have thought about this in a practicality. Like, police don't, the FBI doesn't do, this is not how that goes. And like, and I just kind of go, and that's the thing you pay attention, you notice that kind of shit, but you're like, I'm just not dialed on the other stuff. So, you know, so I'll kind of split the difference a little bit. I mean, I was going to say 5, but then I remembered about the damn flyers. So I'm going to say 4.5. I'll say 4.5 out of 10. 4.5 out of 10. The hole in the floor, the thing with the drill, and the hole in the floor. I was so hoping it was gonna be a thing that was gonna like the floor was gonna cave in or some other thing, but instead it was just like fucking up your wood floor, and it was like it's and it didn't really like he didn't look up at her nothing, and it was sort of like it's the whole herring. So out of 10.
How did you know my college nickname? As a homeowner, the idea of just drilling willy nilly into a hardwood floor is kind of shocking and horrific to me. I mean, like the new French extreme has got shit on that.
Okay.
What?
Oh, sorry. I have to keep an eye on Joe's baby monitor, and from time to time Alexa just goes, I'm going to fuck off and do something else, and you're like, why? And it's like, because I can. What are you going to do about it, bitch? And I'm like, okay, it's cool, little Alexa.
The car and I were sitting on the couch talking last night, and then Alexa's like, okay, playing, and just starts playing some song. We're like, the fuck? Like, totally unrelated, no words involved, no one did Alexa. We're like, all right.
Sometimes Siri does that on Christmas watch, where we'll just be doing stuff, and Siri will just be like that awkward thing if you don't know somebody, to people at a party, and you can like interject yourself in like a group conversation, or like Siri will just be like, I didn't know that. Like, fuck you, Siri, we didn't ask you. Like, what's wrong? Get out of here. Go away. Jesus, go home.
And my Siri is the Irish lady, so at least when she pops up, she sounds a little like Maeve Higgins, and that makes me happy.
We mostly just use it for fart sounds.
Yeah, mine is
Alexa, play a fart, and that was a wet one. Thanks.
Mine is Australian female, which I find outside of British to be the most sexy accent, and so it's great because when we're in my car and we're using navigation or whatever else, she'll give directions, and I get a eye roll from Kristen every single time. So there you go.
Well, let's talk about Brooklyn 45 or Brooklyn 45, a period drama set in 1945 in Brooklyn, starring one of our favorite that guys, Larry Fessenden, who kind of looked like the love child of Jack Nicholson and Tim Robbins.
And yet ageless as well. I feel like he's looked exactly like 30 years.
Yeah, he's looked that way for 30 years. It's crazy.
There's a few people that have managed to just like that, you know, the dude from what, The Commish and whatever else that's been 45 and slightly paunchy most of the time. Michael Chiklis, thank you, for like 60 years now. Mm-hmm. Like, goddamn, what a great, that's a good life.
That's a good gig. Yeah, so Fessenden, always fun to pop up and things, always makes weird, interesting choices. This one is so like a group of friends who were all serving in the military during World War II and seemed to be fairly highly ranked people. It is weird to me that they're all that old, because you could almost make it set in like 1994 and have people that old. Right.
Yeah,
they're all in their 50s and 60s, but if they're like top brass, that makes sense. But turns out, the wife of one of them has died, and he's blaming his German neighbor, who he accuses of being a spy, and at the same time wants to do a seance to contact his dead wife. And then we get another like kind of jamming together of movies where we have like a 12 Angry Men kind of situation.
Yeah.
We're talking about, or about Death and the Maiden even kind of situation.
Mm-hmm.
And then a supernatural situation where the ghosts of the wife is trying to manipulate events as well.
Well, is it?
Yeah.
Well, I guess. Okay. Then one of my questions then for the movie, I guess maybe it's not a question. It's a question. The original seance, right, is to contact the wife.
Mm-hmm.
But then, as Larry Fessenden has pointed out, they can't let go and break the circle. Because once you break the circle, you're going to have to pee every 10 minutes after that or whatever.
Right.
But sorry, I couldn't help it. But if they break the circle without doing the, you know, locking the door or whatever,
well, then, like,
other things can come through, right? So it's not the wife, right, that's fucking with everything after that point? It's
after Fessenden dies.
Right. Well, okay. But isn't it like the idea that broader evil entities are trapping them there now, not the wife? I assumed that was what it was.
I thought it was wife and Fessenden who are supernaturally keeping them from leaving.
I mean, but maybe.
Because really all that does is, if Fessenden's character doesn't die and there is just the locked room movie, there is the only thing that you have to justify is them not getting out of the room, because the supernatural entity is what keeps the key from working.
Right.
And so it other than that, there's not a lot to that. Like, it could have just as easily been just the, you know, general asshole guy.
Right. And that was one of my other questions too, is right. Would you guys, like, I feel like I would have liked this movie better sans supernatural element. What do you think?
When it first happens, you go, oh, whoa, that almost never happens in a seance movie where you have like an arm, like spectral arm come out.
It's a cool, like old school seance move. Yeah.
But then, and having the ectoplasm, which is always fun to see.
Really good. Yeah.
But after that, yeah, it just felt like this could be more tense if we didn't have to keep doing ghosty stuff.
Well, that's the thing. I feel like all the plot is in just sort of the descent into madness of these characters who are kind of, they're so bought into their military careers, and they're kind of unable to leave the war behind for varying reasons, that like, I thought that's all the drama you need. Again, like a 12 Angry Jurors type thing. Like, aside from needing a reason that they can't just bail,
mm-hmm.
that's, I think, a stronger movie. You know, I don't know.
Well, and then that's sort of the, so it's an interesting thing, because like, it's the, and I didn't realize, I don't know how on earth this occurred to me, but in the Wikipedia thing, they're like, oh, it's in real time. And I was like, I didn't even realize that.
Real time compared to what? Right.
Like, there, it's the amount of time that elapses in the movie is the amount of time that elapses in the actual runtime.
But was the amount of time elapsing in the movie significant?
Well, no, it's just sort of like, instead of it being like cutting around in different parts of the day or flashbacky things, whatever, it's like everything that we see is just the course of events of an hour and a half.
Mm-hmm. I guess, yeah. I guess just because there was no reason to think it wouldn't be, it hadn't occurred to me, yeah.
But it was so my biggest gripe with this, and I'll be careful of my language, because I know when Ted was making this, that like there was a lot of behind the scenes stuff and a lot of work and a lot of trying to make things authentic, is that in general, to modern ears, it's the same thing when you watch an old movie, like the language sounds funny because it's not the way people speak now, and so it sounds weird to coming from a modern face, even though this actor's all, I think the actors all did a good job, but I think they're all really solid. It always looks a little, it sounds a little funny, and because of like how much, there's just so much writing in this, that like it starts to feel like really, like overlong is not the right word, but it starts to feel very overstuffed with a lot of data that isn't necessarily like plot relevant. And so there's just a lot of going on about, you know, military procedure, this thing, and then this thing, that thing, and then we got to do this, we got to do that. And the endless arguing about whether or not they're going to kill the German lady. And it's sort of like, I kind of feel like a lot of that stuff, I think they worked really hard to make it like authentic sounding. I kind of feel like a lot of it is just, there's a lot of it that feels very repetitive, and it kind of makes it feel kind of slugs it down a bit, where I would have much preferred, like, if you put that much amount of work into making it sound authentic, like, and doing the really getting the historical references, putting that much work into that part of it, like, that is awesome. And if you cut that down by a third and then you throw some other meat into the thing, then I think it does keep a tenseness. It does keep an unease. It does keep a level of fear. But as it stands, there's a lot of standing around talking about stuff in ways that are very inconsequential. Mm-hmm. And I don't say that in a way that I don't want to be mean. It just sort of like, you know, it's just, it feels like the movie wants more suspense and tenseness and you know, kind of fear to it. But instead it just kind of, there's almost like a procedural component to it that makes it kind of play a little slow.
There's so much dynamite to go off in this.
Mm-hmm, and yeah.
You see the promise of it in the scene where the interrogator is interrogating this woman whom she is 99% sure is innocent and is basically telling her, I have to hurt you now so this guy doesn't kill you.
Right.
And like, that is a great set piece.
Well, that scene is amazing.
If we have that level of shit going on in the rest of this, then you would have had something very like Death and the Maiden-ish, where it just doesn't let up. And I think this lets the air out of it a couple of times. And ultimately it comes down to, like, as they're leaving, it's, man, war sucks. It's like, yeah, I mean, not since Fargo's All This for a Bit of Money have we had somebody just state the mission statement of the film right at the end, you know, like, ugh. So that it just feels like there's so much to work with here, but they didn't pick a direction and run, you know?
Well, and especially given like how good it looks, you know, for one scene, theory, it really looks, it looks great. It has a great look, it has a vibrant look to it. The costuming and the makeup stuff is all like just excellent. And like all that stuff is solid as could possibly be. Like, it has a real warmth to it. It doesn't just look like five doofuses sitting in a room. Like, it really has a lot of life to it, which is really cool. And I don't think it's easy to pull off well. And it's just, it has a great look to it. But I just kept waiting for it to get like, not like in a Saw way or like something along those lines. Or like that one that M. Night Shyamalan produced, it was a Devil, where you go off into five different directions. But I guess what I really was hoping was going to go in the story was, I really wanted, because they really tease a lot of it, it's like these guys were involved with a lot of things that an objective person would say are kind of atrocities, really, that they're kind of in the name of war or whatever, but they really kind of were doing some bad stuff. And like, I kind of would have liked it kind of an old school Tales from the Crypt-esque kind of comeuppance. I was really thinking that was the direction they were going to go. Like, each one of these people gets their uppance come to, and like, it just kind of like, it really just ended up being like whatever the thing is that Fessend, his mania or his possession or whatever, like, wanted the German lady dead. And it was like, well, if you kill the German lady, you get out of the room. Like, then it's like a metaphor for like military doing kind of only following orders, like, kind of feels like the metaphor. And it's like, and that's fine. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. I kind of wanted everybody to get it. When you start to hear, like, you know, school building full of school children and tortured people for this thing and that thing, whatever else, like, I kind of wanted them all to get it in some kind of way. And instead, it kind of just sort of became this sort of like a, like, we were only following orders as sort of like the way that you save yourself. What are you worth saving? Like, that's kind of seems like it's the point. But it's sort of like, ultimately, because you have these actors are so solid, the environment is so good, I kind of wanted there to be more to it than
than just that being the resolution, I guess.
Yeah, now that you say it that way, that makes me really realize that's exactly what I missed. I wanted that. Yeah. Anyway.
It was really weird when he killed the German lady. We're like, we went through all that. And then, I mean, I guess, where is hell? You know. But it is true that, like, just because the person you're fighting is the worst guy doesn't mean that you're not a bad guy.
Yeah, right, yeah.
And that's something that doesn't come across as much as it could in this. Where we don't really have them confronting just how horrible they all are, except for our guy who looks like Errol Flynn, who has the, you know, the throwing the grenade belt in with the school kids. But yeah, if it is gonna be that supernatural thing, then the key getting swallowed by the door needs to be followed with absolute apeshit.
Yeah, 1408 style almost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 1408 style, Beetlejuice style, like hell. Yeah. You know, you like the arm coming out of the table is the biggest thing. The doorknob could
turn into a dick, right, like John dies at the end. This door cannot be opened.
But then, like you said, the acting is great. There are some moments that are really tense. There are some moments that are just shouty.
Yeah.
And it just feels like, I don't know, like I agree with you. I either want the really gonzo, like creep show version of this, or the really stripped down stage version of this, where it's 75 minutes of just crackling energy and unbearable just tension. Just
like full lights up, everybody sweating. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it could be either of those things, and it's not either of them, really. It kind of straddles the line between the two of them.
Well, and then also, too, or you go like, well, you have to try carefully not to do it really, really bad, but or you go the Jacob's Ladder route of being, or the incident at Owl Creek Bridge kind of thing of being like, you know, you place all of them in the situation where they have to kind of confess their sins, as it were, and then you uddy back into reality, and it's just sort of like, oh, damn.
Or you Krampus it, and they're all in a snow globe doing it forever.
Yeah, just something where I think that there's a sound message to be had on the, you know, war is ugly and the only following orders kind of message, but, you know, maybe go darker, meaner, like it can bring something more to it. Just because, I mean, like, and I say this so sincerely that, like, I really love, and all three of the ones that he's directed, We Are Still Here, and then with Mohawk, and then with this one, like the ones that he's directed, there's so much try in like the in trying to get the look going, the look of things and the texture of things. Like there's so much try there, and it's like, and it's so evident that when somebody's got that going for them, there's a lot of life to be seen in the thing that you're making. It's just super, super cool. But then ultimately, like, you know, it's like anything else. It's the writing part of it, and then the tension of it, and then the payoff of it kind of has to match that fervor. And this kind of at times just sort of feels like we're kind of waiting to get to the payoff of what's really going on, and given the little revelations about these people, you just kind of go like, it's like they don't get to go home. Like they don't get to go home. That's ridiculous. Like, you know. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, it's, I think on the overall, I think it's a really cool movie. It's a really cool vehicle for actors who really are solid, and but I guess I just wanted something bigger or more vicious or more Tales from the Crypt-y, given the setup that we were given. Whereas this feels slightly more eloquent and reflective and like a little bit more sad a little bit. And if that's what you want to make, go for it. But it just, given all the pieces, it's like, okay, I want it a little more volume in that regard, you know? So it's like, I'm just kind of really torn on the whole thing, you know, like I've definitely seen a bunch of people in a room movies where you're just like, I would much prefer you just peel the skin off my leg with a carrot peeler than have to keep watching this. This is not that by any stretch.
Yeah. No, it's very well done, and it does have a lot of interesting ideas in it. And it you know, the fantastic performances from all the folks. I think it is just the plotting of it where it kind of writes itself into a corner and then shoots its way out, I guess.
Yeah.
So, yeah, for me, this was like 7.5 out of 10. I think it's always good to see old Larry. It didn't really overstay its welcome. It was pretty okay.
Yeah, I can't quite go that high. I think, I think if you're going to have the supernatural element, I want some kind of larger than life, sort of O. Henry ending or something, you know, some kind of weird comeuppance thing. That sounds good. Otherwise, I think I want this just to be an evil men do 12 angry jurors type thing without the supernatural element. And I think trying to kind of have it both ways made neither one land as well as it could have. I like the cast. I think they're all doing a great job. It just kind of got tired, I think, because it was in not fully picking a lane between kind of the two options I think I would have liked to have seen. It felt like I just was stuck straddling this thing that wasn't ever really pulling me in, and that just made for, towards the end, I was feeling the length of it, and it wasn't exceptionally long. So I'll say it's, you know, kind of right down the middle of the road. I'll sit and give it a 5. 5 out of 10. Pretty fun looking bashed in Larry Fessenden faces. Poor guy.
Yeah,
I did have the moment watching this going, I wonder if he just has a cast of his head that he just keeps around so they don't have to do it over and over. Like, he seems like the kind of guy that just might. You know?
Yeah, no, the biggest takeaway from one of my biggest takeaways from this too was like, you know, was it Christina Kleeb's been other stuff, and so she good German accent, well done. But Anne Ramsey, man, like that was, in terms of all these actors who all did a good job, and even though they're sometimes given a lot of extra words and stuff, yeah, you know, they all did a good job overall. That was really solid. Anne Ramsey was like, I was like, man, I hung on her words. Like she
underplays it in like the best way.
Yeah, like there's a lot of gray weight to what the weariness and how she plays it, and it's like yeah, man, like she get her she's got to gravitas the shit out of some stuff, like get her in more things, because I really was like, out of everybody, like she was the one that really really stood out to me as being like just really exceptionally interesting to listen to and watch. I think she was a good kind of foil to the guy who because I'm sure he's a perfectly pleasant fellow, but the guy with the ears sticking out a little bit, his ears kind of go out a little bit.
Yeah, the colonel or whatever,
major guy or whatever, you know, that fellow. The what's that line from Scrooge about the thing about, you know, the taxi driving down the street with the doors open, like, you know, that thing. Like how am I supposed to describe him? Like his ears stick out a little bit. Like he's given it his all, but his all is sometimes, you know, like big to a degree at which you're like, some of the lines you're like, it's like I kind of got a little eye roll, like, oh god, you know, like the kind of tough guy, you know, like you don't know what to bet to bird to bird to bat, and like the 15th,
but for the era that actually lines up pretty well.
And, well, it does, but he does, but it also is like, it also happens like 15 times with that character.
Yeah,
it's like so Anne Ramsey, like her presence in this is so good because it's just, there's so much dark gray matter to like how she is. It's like I thought she was awesome. So yeah, would certainly be really jazzed to see her get more stuff, especially more genre type stuff, because like she was terrific. So I think I'll kind of split the difference on this. I'm gonna say 6, because I just, you know, there's so much going for it in a lot of positive ways, but I really think from a story standpoint that you bring down the one component that's really fleshed out of this a ton, and you really bring up some more of that kind of that almost 1408-ish sort of thing of like, of just a bunch of crap is going to happen, and there's a bunch of things at stake, and ultimately like it's that Tales of the Crypt thing of being like your uppance will be cummed, and like, and I think all these people kind of deserve it, and so Like, and even Bob, like, I was like, oh, he's just a pencil pusher in the State Department. Like, pencil pushers in the State Department are the people that, you know, like, bombed women and children in Vietnam, and, like, how, go down the fucking list. Pencil pushers were involved in that kind of thing. So he's not.
Kissinger never saw action.
Yeah, it's just, yeah, exactly. Like, yeah, ask the Cambodians if they think Henry Kissinger has any blood on his fucking hands. So, like, you know, he's just as guilty as the rest of them. And so it does set itself up for a nice way to kind of, like, really kind of get after this in a way, but the story that they're telling is more of that metaphor of like kind of the following orders thing, and that's perfectly okay. I just, you know, my experience with it was just sort of like kept wanting more of that element of it. It just wasn't really the movie's priority, so it's not the movie's fault. But I'd say 6 out of 10. I'd say 6 out of 10. Oh, Keys! I love Keys. Oh, I love Keys.
Okay, now you're all just going to have to wait a while. Ah. Boy, the moment when the lady falls out of the closet really sets up an expectation that this movie is going to be more interesting than it was.
It was a good reveal. About that,
sorry, parting thoughts.
Yeah, that was a trip. And it was like, what just happened? Like, holy crap.
Yeah. Anyway, let's take a quick break and then we'll talk about what's going down next time. So next week is the Chattanooga Film Festival. It's running from the 23rd to the 29th. I believe that virtually all of the tickets are gone for the festival. So hopefully if you wanted to see that stuff, you snagged yours already. I had trouble buying a ticket earlier and then finally was able to get through. And had in the interim emailed them, and they just came back and told me that they had their servers crash because of so many people trying to get the virtual tickets.
Oh, wow.
And so they were able to release another block of them, and they added me in. So yeah, very friendly people, but we're going to be watching everything that we can put in our face holes from the 23rd through the 29th. And we'll report back on all that we have seen and heard. And until then, I will remind you that I have been Josh this entire time. If you haven't seen the new Spider-Man movie,
so
you
beautiful. Need to
see that immediately.
It's in the theater, man. It's so good.
Delicious. So yeah, check that one out. And I will see you next time.
And as I've been doing lately, I've got yet another podcast to recommend if you like cool things. I found this one through the Malevolent podcast that I mentioned, I think, last week. But there's another podcast that is a narrative, like, radio play called Eliza, E-L-I-Z-A, A Robot Story. That is a single season, like, not a ton of episodes, that is very well done and addresses the ideas of consciousness, AI, and rights and consent as those things all become increasingly muddled in a kind of near future thing, and is incredibly good and is horror in a very specific kind of way that isn't exactly traditional horror, but is really gets under your skin. And is just super, super well done. It can be a tough listen, so there's definitely like a content warning on that. But check out the description and see if it's for you. But it is really, really good. So check that one out. And with that being said, as far as y'all know, I've been Matt this entire time, and I'm sorry.
This is Charlie Down in Austin. Yeah, the Chattanooga, super excited. They're terrific folks. They're really good people. They program they program things that are interesting. They don't, sometimes it's not necessarily just horror related stuff. It's sometimes it can be different things. Like, they're, so I want to just super, super, super fast to there's a couple things they got in there that I'm really looking forward to. There's a documentary about the adaptations of Stephen King. That'll be premiering on Friday night. It's their Friday night one. And I'm desperately excited to see that because I'm like, this is an interesting subject because a lot of the Stephen King adaptations are not great.
Yeah.
But I love Stephen King. But like, how do you deal with that in a documentary? How do you like, oh, I'm super fascinated. It's like, that one's in there. There's a documentary called A Wandering Path about Gilead Media, which, if you don't know Gilead, they're like, they produced a couple records from Enslaved and like Mizmor and some other kind of indie, kind of really out there kind of music. And sort of like a, like, what does it mean to just like give your whole fucking everything to a passion thing and like kind of a, this bleeding to death by a thousand cuts kind of a thing, but still believe what you're doing. Like, it's, that looks super, super interesting as well. There are seven, count them, seven secret films where they just, that night, every night of the festival, they just like unlock at like midnight or 11 or 10 or whatever. And like, there's, they'll be available throughout, but every night they just will have a different thing that they've, they're going to like have available. I have no earthly idea what that stuff's.
Check closely too, because there's some stuff that's only live for like 48 hours when it
yes.
goes live.
Yeah. Yeah. And their schedule, they've got some blockouts that are kind of shorter time frames, and that's not the festival's fault. That's every
just how it goes. Whatever yeah. else. I'm not complaining. I'm just saying, if there's something you want to check, make sure you can see it.
Once. Yeah. Like, to double check the timing of it. But then there's other stuff that's like, well, Satan Wants You's in there, the documentary. I'm really looking forward to Elderly. That one looks fucking, it's like, whoa. And then is it Trim Season is one that my buddies Cam and Aaron produced. And then there's another one in there called The Last Movie Ever Made that I'm very fascinated to see. And then in the shorts, there's some of our buddies that are in there. We forgot about the zombies is in there, which
yeah. man, there's a short that's just called Gnomes! Exclamation point. So, you know, which, I'm in for that.
Which pisses me off, because Colin and I have bantied around an idea about that for like years, about like a short film about little like lawn gnomes that kind of like avenge the child.
I hope that's
hurt.
What it is.
Yeah. And it's like, oh, that's terrific. So it's just like, there's just a lot of interesting stuff. We've got some buddies there. Megan Duffy's got one in there. And so anyway, there's just a lot of cool stuff that's in there. But yeah, I really think a lot of the Chattanooga people, their programming is excellent and interesting and very diverse and stuff, so I'm really looking forward to that. So yeah, but we'll come and tell you about a bunch of stuff. And usually with these festivals, a lot of their stuff ends up getting onto Shudder, getting onto yeah. Amazon, getting onto various places. So a lot of these things are going to be around, or they're going to be available probably sooner rather than later in some cases. In fact, I think one of them is going to be already
with the
on
writer's
somewhere.
Strike, I bet people are going to be pretty hungry for finished content. So
yeah. And especially, yeah, it's just things that are kind of diverse and interesting. And no offense to anybody, but like a low barrier for entry cost-wise. So like, you know, there's going to be some interesting stuff that'll be there. So yeah, hats off to the Chattanooga people. Wish to God we could be there in person. How cool would that be? But it's a bitch and a half to actually get to Chattanooga, as I've learned, trying to plan it out. So anyway, yeah, if you can snag one of the last tickets, that's awesome. If not, then we'll kind of lay out everything, and then we'll try to keep an eye out for stuff as they becomes available too. So if we do say things that are there that a few months from now, they go, oh, it pops up on Shudder, oh, it pops up on Amazon, pops up here, there, like, we'll sort of let people know. But until then, take care of yourselves, take care of each other. And I've been Charlie, and you should be good, and we should go to bed. All right, see you later. Bye-bye.
Suddenly, he kissed me.
Kissed me.
Yes, because he's Russian, you know? Very, very Russian. It's okay to make fun of them because they are not ethnic minority.